Today Shir Masech the Sukkah Daf Chav Tes. We will begin on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, 8 lines from the top. We learned in the Mishnah, Yard Gshamim, if it starts to rain on Sukkah, one could leave the Sukkah. Mishetisrach HaMikvah, says the Gemara. Tana Brice explains, Mishetisrach HaMikvah, what is the definition of Tisrach HaMikvah? Shall Grayson, food made out of grits. And the way Rashi explains the Gemara is that this type of food gets spoiled much quicker than other food. And as soon as the food gets spoiled to that degree, one may leave the sukkah. I did see that the Meiri says, a different pshat, he says that the mikvah gets spoiled slower. And the Mishnah is teaching us that one should not leave the sukkah so quickly until it's really causing the food to get spoiled. The Smag says that this halacha of Mishetisrach HaMikvah doesn't apply only to someone who's eating these type of food. Even if you're not eating that type of food, but it's raining to the degree that if you had this type of food in the sukkah, the rain would cause it to get ruined. At that point, says the Smag, one should leave the sukkah. We're also going to learn that if because of a rain, one left the sukkah, he continued eating his meal in the house, and then it stopped raining, he doesn't have to go back to the sukkah until he finishes the meal. Because going back and forth during your meal to the sukkah is in the category of a mitzvah, and we learned that a mitzvah is parted from the sukkah. The Ramah says that if somebody is exempt from sitting in the sukkah because it's raining, and he stays there anyway, there's no mitzvah because he's considered a hedget. But says the Bikur Yaakov that somebody who eats in the sukkah when he's exempt, it only applies to if he's eating in the sukkah and it bothers him. He's in a state of distress. He's really not happy about sitting in the sukkah and he thinks he should be sitting in the sukkah. But if somebody, for example, says the Bikur Yaakov, even though the halacha, as we just learned, is that if you left the sukkah because it's raining, and then it stops raining, you don't have to go back into the sukkah. But if somebody goes out of his way, and even though that is the situation, he goes back into the sukkah, now he's not in a state of distress. It stopped raining. Such a person is not considered a hedget. The Sefer Brikos Abayis says that only by rain should one not eat in the sukkah if it's raining. Because, as we learned in the Mishnah, when it rains, it's considered like a Kadosh Baruch Hu poured rain, threw back our avoid at us. But if it's not raining, then and you sit in the sukkah, so then we don't have that same concern, and you're allowed to sit in the sukkah, and the Ramah would not call you a hedget, even though it's not so comfortable to sit in the sukkah. The Marshak says that the reason one shouldn't sit in the sukkah when it's raining, because it takes away from Simchas Yontif. And there's a chiv deraisa on Yontif to have a Simchas Yontif. And therefore he explains that there were people that even when it rained, they would sit in the sukkah. And even though, as we just learned, he says, the Ramah says that such a person is considered a hedget. So how could somebody do so if it's considered a hedget? So he explained that the reason the Ramah calls him a hedget is because he is taking away his Simchas Yontif. But this person, who his Simchas Yontif is to sit in the sukkah under all circumstances. So if that's his Simchas Yontif, he's not going to be considered a hedget for sitting outside of the sukkah when it rains. Furthermore, there's a very big discussion amongst the Rishonim, because the Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayis, when he speaks about rain, so the Rambam says, V'yuridas ha-geshomim betchilas ha-sukkos remes kashem en makabal masayim barotzen. So many want to explain that what the Rambam is referring to is only on the first night of Yontif. Where in the first night of Yontif, there's a chiv deraisa to eat in the sukkah. If it rains, then that is something that's a bad sign. But if it's not the first night of Yontif, then it wouldn't be a bad sign. Furthermore, the Mefarshim explain that it's only the Aruch HaNer, quoting the Bikur Yaakov, says it's only a problem if it didn't rain before Yontif. For example, in Eretz Yisrael, it usually doesn't rain Sukkot time, certainly if Sukkot comes out earlier in the year. And therefore, if it rains at that time, it's a bad simen. But if you live in other countries where it's quite common that it should rain that time of the year, that isn't considered necessarily a simen klala. I saw a very interesting question from the Chashukei Chemed. The Chashukei Chemed discusses that should somebody avoid going to countries where it rains Sukkot time. So he explains that the halacha is that one is obligated to do a mitzvah where he lives, and he's not obligated to go and live in a place where he's going to avoid the sukkah. It's also important to point out that we've mentioned earlier in our masechta that if somebody has an awning, and of course one is not mekayim really the mitzvah sukkah when the awning is on top of your schach open, but Rebbeinu Tam, Tosfos holds that there may be still a key mitzvah sukkah with the awning. So if you have a choice to eat inside or to continue eating outside and in the sukkah with the awning, that's the preferable. It's also very important to point out that when one opens or closes the awning, he should be careful that there should be no water that gets on the ground, if you have ground outside your sukkah, because that would be considered part of the melacha of planting on Shabbos, which we know is asur. So as far as the halacha is concerned, one is certainly not obligated to eat in the sukkah when it's raining, but the way we just explained, that if somebody wants to eat in the sukkah when it's raining, and that's what he says is his simchas yontif, that his simchas yontif is to eat in the sukkah when it's raining, he may do so. The Shas HaTshuvah Simchas HaLazer, Chelik Dalid, Simen Lamed Aleph, says it was the minig of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov that they ate in the sukkah even when it rained. And they explain that our Gemara says, if the servant, the owner, threw water at him, what does he do? So he says, what you do is you continue to sit. We are avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no matter whatever happens to us, we have to continue doing the mitzvah. That's why they used to explain, no matter if it bothers us or it doesn't bother us, we have to do what we're supposed to do. It says the Gemara. Abai Ab Kiyosu Kameh Rav Yosef in Metalalta. Abai was sitting in the sukkah with Rav Yosef. Noshav Zeika, the wind blew, the Kamaisa Tzivsa. And because of that, some of the schach fell into the food. Amru Rav Yosef says, Panidli Mani Mahachi, let's go inside. Amru Abai Vatnan Mishetisra Chamikva, that the halacha is that you only go inside from when the food gets ruined. And here, the food did not get ruined yet. So why are you going in? So he answered, Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef said to Abaye, Lididi, as far as I'm concerned, Kivin Danina Dati, I am an Istanis, I'm very particular. And therefore, since I am very particular, as soon as this happened, it commissioned Nesuch Adami. For me, it's like that I'm a mitzvah. And the way most Rishonim explain that a mitzvah is potum in a sukkah. And not only do they explain that a mitzvah is potum in a sukkah, so the question that the Poskim discuss is, let's say it bothers me, but it wouldn't bother most people. Am I considered a mitzvah or not? So the Poskim, so the Magen Avraham, makes a very interesting point. He says it would not normally be permitted. Because just because I'm a mitzvah, because I'm so particular, doesn't mean that anybody else is mitzvah, and there's no way for other people to know that I am an istanis. But if everybody knows that that's the way I am, that this bothers me, then you could be makel if he is a mitzvah. I saw other paiskim say that if this is the type of a situation that anybody who's in the category of a mitzvah would be bothered by this, so the Paiskim say that such an individual is automatically considered, is automatically, since everybody knows that there are people that are bothered by this type of a situation, everybody, anybody who is indeed bothered with this type of situation may leave the sukkah. Kihad the Rav of Rami Bachama, says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Hayoich b'sukkah, somebody's eating in the sukkah, v'yar the gishamim, it started to rain, v'yarad, and he goes into this house, ein matrichna hayisoy, as we said a few moments ago, we don't bother him, la'alois achig mesudasoy, we don't make him go back in to eat his meal. We let him finish his meal outside and inside the house, even though it stopped raining. And the reason explained the Chazon Yecheskel, because we keep on applying the concept of Teshu Kentaduru. And since when somebody's in, wherever somebody is during a meal, once he starts the meal, he finishes the meal wherever he starts, the halacha is the same thing here. You started the meal, you could finish the meal where you are. Having said that, I did see that there are poskim that want to suggest, the Rishonim discussed this already, let's say it started to rain. So you went into your house, and then before you started eating in your house, it stopped to rain. Do you have to go back to the sukkah? Or could you eat in the house? The Ran seems to learn that once you went into the house, the halacha is that you could eat inside the house, even though you didn't start eating before the rain stopped. There are other Rishonim that disagree, and their opinion is that if you didn't start eating before it started to rain, and it stopped before it stopped to rain, and now it's not raining, the halacha is that you should go back into the sukkah and not eat that meal inside the house. It does, however, seem that if you sit down, if you sat down to eat, you didn't actually eat yet, but you sat down to eat inside the house, that's already enough that you shouldn't have to go back into the sukkah. So Pasha Pshat is because it's Teshva Kane Tadura. I saw others explain that the Levush explains because it's Mitzvah. Having to get up and down is considered a Mitzvah, and a Mitzvah is part of a sukkah. Another question that I saw that the Lechem Yehuda discusses is, what about if somebody was learning in the sukkah and it started to rain? And because it started to rain, he went inside and now it stopped to rain. Does he have to go back out to the sukkah? So the way he explains, it depends. If you're learning one subject, so as long as you're learning that one subject, you're not obligated to go back out to the sukkah. But if you're getting up anyway because you're not learning without an interruption, or you're starting to learn something else, then you should go back to the sukkah when you go to learn that other limud. Yoshin tachas sukkah, or says the Gemara, you were sleeping in the sukkah, v'yor the gushamim, and then it started to rain, v'yor it, so you went inside your house, em atrich noisoy at shiyor. You don't have to go back in until yor. But ask the Gemara, what does the word yor mean? It really depends on the spelling. Ibailu achior doesn't mean until you wake up. As long as you're sleeping, you can remain sleeping outside. But once it starts sleep, once you wake up and it's not raining, you have to go back out to the sukkah. Achior. What it means is until it becomes day. So that means you were sleeping in the sukkah and it started to rain. You went indoors and then it stopped raining. Do you have to get up? And you're up anyway, you woke up in the middle of the night. Do you have to go out to the sukkah? Or until the morning, you don't have to go back out to the sukkah? Toshma says the Gemara, Achior v'yala marashacha. Here the Brisa clearly says, with an aleph. So ask the Gemara, what does it say, yor v'yala marashacha tarti? Aleima achior v'yala marashacha. You only have to go back out to the sukkah if you have two conditions met. Number one is you woke up. So let's say somebody went to sleep inside and he's sleeping and it's ready, the morning came, but he's still sleeping. He may continue sleeping. And another halacha is that even if you woke up, but if you woke up before it's the morning and it's still not raining, you don't have to go out to the sukkah. So I saw that the Chashuki Chemed discusses a shaila, what's going to be halacha if it's not raining Sukkot by night, and it's not raining yet, but the halacha is that you see that it's going to rain, or the forecasters said that you have to rain, it's going to rain. That, what's the halacha? Could you still go and sleep inside and say, why would I go sleep outside when I know it's going to rain? Or is the halacha that since it's not raining right now, as we keep on repeating in our shiurim, when it's not raining, we're mechuyev to sit in the sukkah, what is the halacha? And he quotes his father-in-law, Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal. Rabbi Yoshev said that under such circumstances, you have to go stay in the sukkah. We don't have a heter until it's actually raining. And right now, it's not actually raining, so we have no right to go out of the sukkah. Moshlem Adav Adoyma, and as we said before, the Mishnah says, when it rains at sukkahs, how do we look at it? To Eved that comes to pour a cup of beverage for his owner, and he throws it at him. So ask the Gemara Bailu, Mishafach Lami, how do we understand this marshal? Do we understand it as if the Eved poured something for his owner, and he didn't do it properly? He was pouring something for his owner, and he didn't do it properly. And therefore, what the Mishnah means to say is that if it rains on Sukkot, it shows that we are not doing our Avodas Hashem properly. Or is it that the owner is throwing it at the Eved, and the owner is making a declaration, I'm not interested in what you have to do? Toshma, Shafach Loi Rabbi Kitan Al Netanya, Shafach Loi Rabbi Kitan Al Panav, Vamalai Ish Efshi B'Shemushach. It's a message from Hashem that we're not doing it properly. And the Mefarshim explained, what's the Nafkamina if it's we who didn't pour it properly, or if HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw it back in our face? So the Mefarshim explained the Nafkamina is, if can we continue the discussion that we had earlier? May we continue sitting in the sukkah even though it's raining? If we're saying that it's a message from Hashem, that Hashem is sending us a message that I am dissatisfied with your avodah, so then we may not continue in the sitting in the sukkah. We're getting a clear message from Hashem that this is not what I want from you. But if on the other hand, it's Hashem, if we're not doing the avodah properly, so then we should try to do the avodah properly, and we may continue sitting in the sukkah, even though it's raining. Tana Rabbanan. So says the Gemara, since we're speaking about weather, the Gemara speaks about different weather situations. Tana Rabbanan, b'zman shashama chamaloika, when there's a solar eclipse, simen ra l'chala olam kulay. It's a bad sign. Marshal ma'adav adayma, Melech Bas Vadam made a party, and he put out a lamp, and when he gets angry, let them sit on the dock. So many Mefarshim asks the question, an eclipse is something that happens in the sky, it happens by itself. So why is that necessarily a simon that we're not in a good place? And therefore they explain it's only considered something bad when it comes out of the regular schedule. But if it comes with the regular schedule, it doesn't have that rule. Tanya Ramei Omer, Kozman Shema Iris Loiken, when the sun, the moon are out of sync, Simaralis and Name Shall Yisrael. That's a bad sign for Klal Yisrael. The word Sunem Shal Yisrael is a euphemism. This is a sign that Kadosh Baruch Hu Chas V'Shalom is punishing us. Mashal Asayif Shabbal Beis Sefer. It's like a teacher who came to the school and he is holding a strap that they used to hit children with. Midoig, who is the one that's most concerned? Mishragalukas B'Kol Yoyim, who died. The child who gets punished from his teacher on a regular basis is the child that's going to be most concerned here as well. And since, explained the Mefarshim, Klal Yisrael are those who unfortunately suffer the most, since we are the ones that suffer the most, when there's a bad sign, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is sending a bad sign to the world, we in Klal Yisrael are those who need to be who need to be most concerned. Tana Bana. Bizman Shacham Aloika, when there's something that happens to the sun, Simar Alay of the Kachavim. It's a bad sign for the Kachavim. Levana Aloika, but when the moon, something happens to the moon, Simar Alay Sunem Shisra, it's a bad sign for Klai Sol. Ne Shisra Mana Levana, we know that the solar, the lunar, we follow the lunar calendar, Klai Sol follows the lunar calendar, and the Umasailam of the Kachavim. They follow the solar calendar. And as many Mefarshim explain, the reason that we follow the lunar calendar is because the moon is always smaller. And the moon is not only smaller, the moon is gets its light as a reflection from the sun. What makes Klal Yisrael special, I said above, Rebbe made this explanation, is that we consider ourselves small and we take our reflection from those that are greater than us. And that's why he says, we know that a Talmud Chacham is called a Talmud Chacham. Why is a Talmud Chacham called a Talmud Chacham? Because we always consider ourselves a Talmud. We always consider ourselves those that are still learning. And that's why we, Klal Yisrael, are connected to the lunar system versus the Umas Ha'olam that are connected to the solar system. Says the Gemara. So I saw the Kedushas Levi explains that the Gemara says, Masechta Tainus, Lo Yom Tov Yisrael, there were no greater Yom Tov B'Klal Yisrael, Chamisha Basbav, like the 15th day in Av, Shepoi Paskul Atzim Merocha. So the question is, why does the Gemara say, Lo Yom Tov Yisrael? So he explains that what happens on the 15th day of the moon. On the 15th day of the moon is when the moon of the month is when the moon is at fullest. And then it gets weaker. And that's what he's saying. Layam Taim Yisrael, Klai Yisrael will connect themselves to the moon. So the 15th day of the month is the day that the moon is at its fullest. And since, as we just explained, we connect ourselves to the moon, so that's why a yontif that falls out on the 15th day of the month is a yontif for Klal Yisrael. Like the Mizrach, when there's a problem on the east side, that means when the issue with the sun is when the sun comes up in the morning, similarly Yoshev Mizrach. It's a bad sign for the people on the east side. But Marav, when there's a problem when the sun goes down. Similarly, Yoshvei Marv. Be'emtzerakia, and when there's something bad that happens on top of the sky, Simara l'kala olam kuloi, that it's a bad sign for the entire. It's a bad sign for the entire world. Pan of dam l'dam, if the sun looks like blood, cherba olam, it's a sign that there's going to be war. L'sak, if it looks like a sackcloth, chitzi raba olam. It means there's going to be hunger in the world. Lazu, if it looks like both, like blood and a sack, cher v'chitzi ra ban loylam. If the sun has a situation when it goes down, pronis shoylava. It means that the trouble that it's showing won't come so quickly. But if it happens when it comes out in the morning, it's a sim that's going to happen very quickly. And there are those that say chiluf advarim, just the opposite. It says the Gemara, there is no nation that suffers. She'en Eloheho. Every nation in the world has a sar, has a malach in Shemayim. That suffers along with it. Shnema v'chol elahei mitzrayim loshen rabim. It means in this world and in the Shemayim eser shvatim. B'zman Yisrael osim mitzrayim shlamakim and when Klal Yisrael act appropriately ain't mitzrayim mikol ela. All of these signs that the Gemara just discussed has nothing to worry about. Shnema koy amar Hashem el derech agoyim al tilmedu. Don't learn from the way the nations of the world work. You have nothing to worry about the signs that come from the Shemayim. Only the Umas Olam have to worry about them. We have nothing to worry about. We don't have to worry about it. And as I saw, what Ben Yoda says, that what the Gemara means to say is that not only won't they affect us, but even we have nothing to be worried about. And not only do we have nothing to worry about, but says the Ben Yoyada, even if we're living amongst Umas Olam And these signs are bad signs for the Umas Olam. They have nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael will be protected on the Klal Yisrael will be protected under all circumstances. Tan Rabbanim. Bishvil Arba Dvarim. Chacham Aloika. There are four reasons for this to happen. Al Abezdin Shemesh and Nisbe Kalocha. If the Rosh Bezdin was Nifter and people did not eulogize him. People did not show the proper avelis for a great person that passed away. So I saw that even the Shloss says that even if the person the Talmud Chacham passed away was a very great person, was an elderly person, doesn't make a difference. When that happens, it's a bad sign. But I saw another pshat that Al Abezdin Shemes Ve'en Anifsika Alocha, that means that normally a son says a hesped on the father. But when we see that a father, if we live in a time, Rachman Tzlan, Lo'ilein V'lo'y Aleichem, that a father has to say a hesped on a son, that's a very bad sign. That means that the son passed away when he was young, and that is not what should happen. There was a girl who was being chased to be violated. And there was nobody there to protect her. When they live in a time of Mishkav Zachar, which the Torah considers a to'eva, an abomination. Two brothers whose blood was spilled at the same time. So the Aruch HaNer explains this Gemara based on a Gemara Masechta Saita, that the Gemara says that when they wanted to bury Yaakov Avinu in the Marasa Machpelah, Esav came and said that he's the Bechor, and he deserves a part in the Marasa Machpelah, not Yaakov Avinu. And the brothers said that Yaakov Avinu bought the Bechaira, and because Yaakov Avinu bought the Bechaira, the portion in the oil, in the Marasa Machpelah belongs to him. And Chushim Ben Don, who was deaf, and did not understand what was going on here, was the one that ultimately killed Esav that day. And that's what Rivka said. Loma eshkul gam shneichem yom echad. Rivka already saw that Yaakov and Esav would be both die on the same day. And that's what the Gemara means to say. That just like that on that day was the day that Yaakov and Esav died on the same day, and it brought darkness to the world, Esav wanted to complain against our Klal Yisrael's position in the world, and that's why, because of that, it was a bad sign. And whenever that happens, that's a bad sign that to the world. There are four reasons that the sun, the moon, and the stars suffer. A kosei plaster. Somebody, people who write bad things about other people. Vamidei ed sheker. People who say false testimony. The Gemara Masechta Bekam Daf Ayin Tes on the base teaches us that we're not allowed to raise Behemoth Daka in Eretz Yisrael. And if somebody raises such animals in Eretz Yisrael, it's considered highly inappropriate. Magali Behemoth Daka Eretz Yisrael. Valkotze Elonis Toilonis, somebody who cuts good trees. Of course, the Paiskim say that under certain circumstances, you are allowed to cut trees if the tree is not giving any fruit, if the tree is in a place where we could use that tree for better purposes, then we're allowed to cut them. But under normal circumstances, the halacha is one may not, under normal circumstances, the halacha is that one may never cut down a fruit tree. And if somebody does cut down a fruit tree, it's a very big isser. It's the isser about tashchis. The Paiskim, the Shas HaTshuvos, discuss the issue about tashchis with cutting a fruit tree, and the Yavetz and the Shas HaTshuvos being in Tzion say that it's only considered about tashchis if it's a good fruit tree that you're destroying. But if it's a fruit tree that isn't giving fruit or anything like that, there is no issur of hashchasas ilanus. But even under those circumstances, the Paiskim, the Chasam Sofer, and other Paiskim say that we should be careful. The Chasam Sofer says that one of the etzes that he suggests is that we should take the whole tree, with the earth under it, with the roots, and replant it elsewhere. Others say that the tree should be sold to an akum, because the halacha is that this din, that we're not allowed to cut down a tree, was only said to Klal Yisrael, it wasn't said to the Umas Olam. So we sell the tree to an akum, we don't have this consideration. Says the Gemara further, the times where the government takes away people's property, they hold with them a loan document that was paid up. Because that could end up being very dangerous. Because you may use that document again, even though you already paid. Or if you lend money with interest, we know that the Torah says that one may not lend money with interest. In situation where somebody could have said something and he didn't say anything, the people pledge stocker and they don't fulfill their pledge. So I saw that many mefarshim mashah and many mefarshim explain that if somebody doesn't keep his pledge, it's an outright avera. So why is it something that's singled out? So the Mashah explains that sometimes somebody makes a pledge and he claims that the reason he made this pledge, even though he didn't have the intention of paying the pledge, was because he wanted to get other people to donate to tzedakah. And the Gemara is teaching us that that is never a heter to give, to make a pledge that you have no right, that you have no intention to pay. And therefore, even though you claim that you're doing it for good intention, you have no right to do something like that if you didn't mean to do what you were supposed, if you didn't mean to pay what you were supposed to pay. Amar Rebbe, Amar Rav, Mishvil Abed Varam Nichsei Balabatim Yoytzon Tamayim. There are four reasons that people lose their money. Akosh Yisrach Socher, they don't pay their workers what they're supposed to pay. Baloshki Socher, one is Akosh Yisrach Socher means that they intend to pay, but they delay in paying. Is that they don't pay at all. Something that you have the obligation and responsibility to do, and you've put it on somebody else. And somebody who's arrogant. It says the Gemara, that's the worst of all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu particularly has a dislike for Bali Gaiva. Avba Novim Ksiv concludes the parak. People who are modest, the pasuk says, "Vanovim Yirshu Aretz V'Sangul Rav Shalom." Somebody who acts in a modest way will be zoicha to have bracha in his life. Harun l'chayoshon, harun l'chayoshon, harun l'chayoshon. We begin, as we've learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we said the first part of our Masechta focused on Hilchas Sukkah. And the second part of our Masechta focuses on the Dalaminim. So now we begin to learn the Zechiv, the Torah says, V'lekachtu lechem, b'yoyim arishin, priyetz hodor, kapis tamarim, v'anaf aitz ovois, v'arvei noch, v'smachno f'nei Hashem, l'keichem, shivis yomim. And here we see that we have to take the Dalaminim. Midaraisa, the Chiv to take Dalaminim in the Beis HaMikdash was all 7 days. And outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Chiv of taking the Dalaminim was only on the first day of Sukkot. But then Chazal made a gzeira that even we who are outside of the Beis HaMikdash should take the Dalaminim every day of Yontif. Even though the Torah mentions the mitzvah of Sukkot, of Esrog first, V'lekach lechem priyetz hodor, and then the Torah says kapas tamarim, the Mishnah, the Tana, first speaks about Hilchas Lulav, because the Lulav is the meaning that we say the bracha of Natilas Lulav. One reason is because the Lulav is taller and more noticeable than all the other of the Dalaminim. Another pshat is that because we take these three minim, the Lulav, the Adasim, and the Aravis, together, and therefore since we take them together, so they're the majority. That's why we say Al Natilas Lulav. And another pshat that I saw is, as we're about to begin learning, many of the disqualifications that we're going to learn in our Shir Mitzvashem are because the lulav is not hador. It's not beautiful when you take a lulav that has the various disqualifications that we're going to discuss. Now, when the Torah speaks about the esrog, the Torah is very clear. The Torah says that the esrog that we take has to be a pre-eitz hador. And since the esrog has to be a pre-eitz hador, so we know the esrog has to be beautiful, and therefore many of the disqualifications that we're going to now learn disqualify the esrog because it's not hador. But when we speak about the lulav, the Torah never explicitly says that the lulav has to be hador. And the way Tosfos specifically describes, we learn those halachas from the halacha of the esrog. And we have a klal in Shas that the Tana always prefers to teach us something that we learned from a drasha. So therefore, since the din of hiddur by an esrig is much more obvious than the din of hiddur by a lulav, that's why we prefer to speak about the hiddur of a lulav before we speak about the hiddur of an esrig. And that's why our perek begins with speaking about the lulav. I saw that the Rekeach explains that the gematria of the word lulav is chayim. And therefore, a lulav hayovish that we're going to learn, a lulav that's dried out is possible. Because a lulav which represents life has to have the characteristics of life, not the characteristics of death. I also saw that the Torah begins Parshas Bereishis with the letter Beis, Bereishis Bara, and it ends the Torah with the letter Lamed, Leinu Kol Bnei Yisrael. Nevi'im begins with the letter Vav, Vihi Achrei Moshe, and it ends with the letter Lamed. The last word is Vial. You look at all four of these letters, they are the letters of Lulav. And since Lulav represents Kol HaTorah Kula, so when we start speaking about the halachas of the Alaminim, it's only appropriate that we begin speaking about the Lulav. So it teaches us the Mishnah Lulav HaGazel. If somebody stole a lulav, the halach is that it's posel. One is not mekayim the mitzvah with a lulav that was stolen. The lulav, the yavish, or if the lulav dried out, then the lulav is posel. There's a machloikus rishonim. What does this mean that the lulav hayavish is posel? The Ravid says that when we speak about a lulav posel, it means the shedra, the spine of the lulav, and the tiyomis, the two middle leaves. That's what the Mishnah means to say that a lulav hayavish is posel. The Ritva disagrees. And the Ritva says when we speak about lulav hayavish, we speak about all the leaves of the lulav. And what the Mishnah means to say is that if most of the leaves of the lulav are dried out, then that lulav is posel. How dry is dry? So Tosfos says that it's so dry that if you put your fingernail on it, it starts to crack. And then that's considered that it's dry. There are other Rishonim that are more machmer and say, even if you just see that it's dry, it's losing its green shade, you could tell that it's starting to dry out, that's already considered a lulav hayavish, which is posel. And even though the reason a lulav hagozel and a lulav hayavish are posel is for different reasons, still, the Mefarshim point out that this the apostle. And the reason that they put together is just like a lulav hayavish, just like a lulav hayavish is apostle all 7 days of Sukkot, so too as a lulav hagozel, the halach is that the lulav hagozel is apostle all days. So Rashi explains the reason a lulav hayavish is apostle is because it's not hodor. And there's a machloikis Rishonim how to understand this. Some say that every mitzvah has to be done b'derech hador, and it has to be done in a beautiful way. And a lulav hayavish lacks in hador. Tosfos seems to learn that just like the Torah says when we speak about the esrig, the Torah uses the words pre-eitz hador, and from there we see and learn that esrig has to be a beautiful fruit. So says Tosfos, we learn the halacha of lulav from the halacha of esrig. Therefore, just like a lulav, if it's yavesh, That's like an esrig if it's not hodor. So you're certainly not mekayim the mitzvah. So too the halachi is by the lulav as well. Asherah. Asherah is a tree that was made into an avodah zarah. And the reason it's called an asherah is because asherah means profitable. So we have profit, we have pleasure from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avodah Zarah, it's just the opposite. The Avodah Zarah could do nothing for those that worship the Avodah Zarah. The beauty of the Avodah Zarah is only because it gets from others. So that's why the Asherah tree, the Avodah Zarah tree, is called an Asherah to represent its benefiting from those that worship it. So the Avodah Zarah tree, or the tree of Eir Nidachas, if a city all worshipped Avodah Zarah, that city is considered an Eir HaNidachas, and if there was a lulav tree growing in that city, the lulav of HaNidachas is possible. Because regarding the Asherah, the Torah says, Vesrifayim Tisrifun Be'esh. Regarding the Eir HaNidachas, the Torah says, Veskol Shlola Tikboitz Atoich Rechava Vesrafta Be'esir. So everything in the city has to be completely destroyed and burnt. And therefore, as we're going to learn, that they're considered as if they don't exist. And since they're considered as if they don't exist, we don't have a lulav with which we can be mekayim the mitzvah. Nikdam roisha, if the top leaves of the lulav got cut off. So again, here too, there's a machloikus, which leaves are we speaking about? Many Rishonim, most Rishonim say that when we're speaking about Nikdam, we're talking about the two leaves that come up all the way to the top. And if they were split, Nifritzu Alav, if the leaves of the Lulav were separated from the Shedra, Pasul. That's not considered a Lulav, that's not considered a Hadar. Nifridu Alav, if the leaves got separated from the spine of the Lulav, Kosher. The Tanna Kamma holds that such a Lulav is kosher. Rav Yehuda Omer, Yagdenim Malmala, we should tie them together, and that's why we'll be able to prevent the problem. Tzine Harabazel, if you have lulavim that grow on this type of mountains, and they're very poor quality lulav, they don't have a lot of leaves, the leaves are separated from each other, they don't go up along the length of the shedra of the lulav. In all these cases, as long as the leaves touch each other, even though they're not the most beautiful lulav, it's ksheres. Lulav sheyesh by shlosh tfachim, a lulav that has three tfachim, kdei lenaneba, that it's large enough that you could shake the lulav, you could take it in the sixth direction, that is enough to be considered, that is connected to be a kosher lulav. So here it seems that you have to have gimel tfachim, because that's the height of the Adasim and the Aravos as well. But most Paiskim hold that the Lulav has to be a Tefach above the other Minim, so that we could be able to do the Nanoim properly. And even though, as I saw, Shlomo Zalman points out, that the Din of Nanuim is not a Din Daraisa, the obligation to do Nanuim is not a Din Daraisa, but still, he says, once there's a din of Nanuim, the halach is that the Torah said that the shear of the lulav should be big enough that we should be able to do the Nanuim properly.